from the top.
Welcome to the Herd Podcast, brought to you by Elephant Run District, an independent theater company in New York City. Our play, recorded October 16th, 2016, is Self Same by ERD company member Kira Nickwork. Fun fact, Kira went to an Irish language high school and speaks fluent Irish, or as Americans would say, Gaelic. This is an unabridged presentation of an original work by Kira Nickwork and cannot be copied, rebroadcast, or otherwise presented without the playwright's permission. For more information about Kira's plays and the other wonderful things she does, follow her on Instagram at Nickwork. That's at N-I-C-H-U-I-R-C. We hope you enjoy this podcast, and if you feel inspired to donate to support our company and the spirit of independent theater that we represent, please go to our website, elephantrundistrict.org, and click on the donate button. Links to our website with all of the fun stuff we're doing can be found on this page. Check them out. This play features Claire O'Malley, Bill Bria, Peter Halpin, and is directed by Amy Todoroff. That's me. And now, please enjoy Self Same by Kira Nickwork.
I suppose there's this idea of Ireland as being really grand and all. Like a really nice, pretty place, people singing away all of the time. And that isn't too far off. Like, Ireland is real pretty and green and all that, in places it is. But most of the time it's just damp and grey and almost, like, fading from view. Back when Dad was alive, me and Fionn were having a big fight about what, I can't remember. We were always fighting about something. Anyway, we were fighting and then Mam started getting involved and yes, she always preferred Fionn to me, so it was getting to be a bit like the two of them were ganging up on me. And I was getting a bit hysterical and Fionn was crying and she was roaring at me, twisting the tea towel in her hands, probably trying to stop herself from belting me across the face with it. Anyway, we're all there yelling and then Dad comes in and takes the whole scene in and he says, "Come here to me, Amy." And he just sort of scooped me up and brung me out to the kitchen. I could hear Fionn and Mam in the other room, both of them still squalling away. The two of them did always have a hysterical tendency. "Never mind," says Dad. "Here, throw them boots on." So we set off down towards the beach. Dad never spent much time with us, really. I was desperate for it to last as long as it could. I'd put my hands in my pockets because of the cold, and then I'd take them out again, thinking, what if he tries to take my hand? And I swear to God, the thought of it got me so wound up that I was sure he could hear my heart beating and fluttering in my chest. "Look at that, Amy," he says, pointing at a little bird hopping along. "That's a thrush. See the speckles? It was right cute." Some things I can remember so clearly, but it seems like so much else is just completely lost in the haze of my earliest childhood. We got down onto the beach anyway, and we were just running along, playing some game. He pretended to fall down on the sand and rolled over, laughing. And then he sighed and stretched his arms out, his eyes closed. It was lovely. He sat up and leaned on his knees, looking down at the sand. "Look at that," he said, holding up a rock. "See how flat that is? Hold it up for me there." He got up and we walked down to the shore. He took the stone back off of me and he rolled it over and over in his hands. And then he threw it. And I swear to God, that stone flew. It just skipped and skipped until we could hardly see it. "Janie Mac," says he, "that went halfway around the world. Where'd you reckon it got to, Amy?" he asked. "I don't know," I said, grinding the heel of my boot into the sand. "Australia, Canada, America, Japan, Russia," he said, grinning at me. "Maybe it'll skip right around the world and come back and hit us in the head." "It's gone somewhere else," I said. "It's right," he says. "Somewhere other than here, eh? Maybe it'll land somewhere and someone will throw it back over to us." I didn't like that idea of it being thrown back. You know when you're a kid and something just doesn't sit right with you? "I hope not," I said. He looked down at me. "Yeah, me too," he said. And then he did take my hand. He squeezed it in between his big fingers and I looked up at him, dizzy, drunk with delight. And then the two of us looked out at the sea and the sky and I thought about Fionn.
Elvis had one. William Randolph Hearst. Yeah. Apollo and Artemis. Philip K. Dick, who was a writer and all. Romulus and Remus. Liberace. Jacob and Esau. Pharez and Zerah, Castor and Pollux, who were together forever. Victor and Jeanne d'Alvois, who were dead before they ever took a step, said Mam. And Cleopatra, she had a son and a daughter, like me and Aineen. And, see, I used to know loads more. Sometimes Aineen would help me out. She had a grand memory for it, more often than not. She'd just sit looking at me and tell me it was stupid and I was stupid and that. We had great times then, so we did. Then all did grand things. They did. Liberace played the piano. Jacob and Esau, they were in the Bible. They were mad too. I looked it up and showed it to Aineen. But she just told me to feck off. Mam said, Aineen, I came out of the womb together and with our arms wrapped around one another like a hug. Out of the womb and the two of us hugging because we loved each other so much already. Everyone thought it was lovely. But Aineen said, actually, Fionn, I had my arms about your neck. It was throttling you I was. But we all laughed when she said that. All of them twins did grand things anyways. I wrote it all down in a little book. I had a terrible memory for that sort of thing. So I wrote it all down and she helped. I gave it to her before she went away. I don't know where it is now.
Aineen likes stories. She really knows how to tell a story. How to start a story in a way that would make people want to listen. In a way that really gripped me. It's a skill. It's impressive. What I knew of Ireland, well, it was pretty shaky. I guess I mostly associated Ireland with alcohol. I suppose a lot of people do. But Aineen was always going on about this great oral tradition. They like to talk and sing. She was always saying, tell me a story, tell me a story. She loves to hear stories. I always tried to think of a good story, you know, one that would impress her. But I always found it difficult to tell them. She could talk and talk, carried away by her own story, whereas I'd get stuck and lost and forget where I was.
We were born anyway, and we all headed home together. So that was grand. What wasn't grand was 8 years later, when Dad went out into the back garden on a rainy night, climbed up the biggest tree and dropped himself off it with Mam's dressing gown wrapped around his neck. The rope broke and he fell to the ground. That was grand. Well, I say he was grand, but actually he broke his leg or his arm. No, it was his leg. That doesn't matter anyway. I was upset because I thought he wouldn't be able to drop me to football, you see. But it must have been his leg, so I suppose. Or, well, anyway. He was whinging so loudly that one of the neighbours, thinking it was her cat, went outside and seen him on the ground, wearing what she thought was a pink scarf. Well, after that, people around started saying he's quite lit, you know, in the head like. And he didn't like that at all, and Mam didn't like it either. So she just stayed in with us, and there we had a fine time. After Aineen left, it was just me and Mam. And I guess that was all right too. Anyway, a few months later, walking down the main road, Daddy slipped on a puddle, gone icy right through, out into the path of a car, and that was the end of it.
Elvis, Apollo, Artemis, Liberace, Cleopatra, Jacob, Esau, Pharez, Zerah. Those, in order, the ones Fionn forgot most. He'd be sitting down writing out his little lists, writing very, very slowly. And as soon as he got stuck, he'd ask me for help, and I'd say the whole list as fast as I could. And he'd say, ah, here, Aineen, slow down. And I'd say it again, only faster, and again, and again, and faster, until the two of us were laughing and laughing. More often than not, he'd get too excited and end up upset. And I'd get into trouble for getting him all riled up and hysterical. And I'd say to Mam, sure, wasn't I only trying to help him? But sure, she'd never believe me, the bitch. Mostly, I'd just tell him to feck off because he was always asking me for help. Every time I turned around, he'd be sitting there with his sad upside-down face saying, oh, but Aineen, can't you help me with this? Can't you remember that? Or asking if I was sad or happy or whatever. And he'd always tell on me when I had my fingers all covered in jam or whatever. And he'd look at me with those big, sad, droopy eyes, and he'd say,
"Ah, here, Aineen, I'm sorry, but I'm telling many."
And so I'd give him a bit of a kick, is all. And he'd go tumbling down and turn back, crying already, and say,
"Aineen."
And he'd go running off and tell Mam, not only did I eat the jam before dinner, but I also gave him a kick. Fionn was obsessed with stories that wax lyrical about the stupendous world of twins. Born in each other's arms and reading each other's minds and feeling sore when the other broke his arm and all that shite. He was a bit, but you wanted to keep him safe, wrap your arms around him. And then there were other times when you knew he'd keep you safe. When we were little, people were always all over us and picking us up and lifting us right up to their big shiny faces with their glazy eyes. Their stupid, ignorant maws flapping open and shut, and them telling our mam how lovely us both were, and she'd just nod and clench her jaw like she always did, like she was stopping herself from saying something else. And I always thought she was stopping herself from yelling, "You take them! You take them then if you think they're so cute!" Still.
Her dad died. He was hit by a car. She said it in passing. She said everything important in passing. Trivial things she would weigh deliberately upon, but she told me about that like it was nothing. When I tried to ask her more about it, she just shrugged and said, "Oh, it doesn't matter anyway." My dad was sick. He was really sick at the time. Cancer. Not really a great man, all things considered, but still, you wouldn't wish it on anyone. Lung. He smoked. He smoked a lot. An awful lot. So did I at the time. I thought I was cool. I thought I looked good. You know, you'd think I wouldn't have, my dad being the way he was, but I did.
We looked the same, but that didn't make us the same person. Fionn was right sensitive, but you'd never have thought it to look at him. People were always taken aback when they met Fionn properly and got to know him, like, because from the look of him, they'd have thought he was a rougher sort. He didn't look rough or anything, he just looked like someone who you wouldn't want to get in a fight with, because you'd know from the outset you'd lost. I was always meaner to him than I'd meant to be. He never really retaliated. No matter what terrible thing I'd say to him, no matter how upset and hysterical I'd get, he'd always come over to me with his big soft hands and pat my tears away and say,
"Why are you crying? Huh? Aineen, why are you crying? Little birds don't be crying, Aineen. Do you know that? And do you know what, Aineen? They sing instead."
And he'd sing away then, a lovely sad tune that I'd ached to hear again and again. Jesus God, I ache to hear it again.
We worked in Dad's bar. Mam worked there too, sometimes, when she felt up to it. When Aineen left, she got a job working in another bar thousands of miles away. Mam really had a field day about that. When Aineen called up and she and Mam chatted and Mam hung up on her, I was annoyed. I wanted to talk to Aineen, tell her the bar was different without her. It was still loud with all the drunks and the singers and that, but it was different working with someone who wasn't her. Someone who didn't come upon me in a dream and give me a poke. Someone who didn't wet her fingers and flick water at me, and I behind the bar. Someone I didn't walk home with, and her telling me all about the funny customers she'd had. I missed her. We had our best times. When we were working in the bar together, we were a good team, me and her. She chatting and joking with customers and I pulling pints and setting straight anyone who'd had a few too many. We'd both stay until close and clean up together, her mopping the floors and me lifting barrels and wiping tables and the pair of us laughing away at nothing. There were the times, huh, when both of us would be laughing and chatting away and I'd almost say to her, "Jesus, Aineen, wouldn't the world be a perfect place if it were only the two of us, huh?"
Sometimes I was so happy, but a lot of the time I did want to be somewhere other than home. It was fine and all, but the older I got, the worse I began to feel. The more I felt like the place was pushing down on me and trying to hold me in. And for Fionn it was grand, in a way, because he couldn't see it for what it was. I had always had this idea of America as, you know, this great, amazing place, somewhere I'd probably never get to. But I always had this idea of it as someplace far off that maybe, if I was very lucky, like, I could go there one day and get away from Ireland.
I did miss her. I wondered if she was having fun working in the other bar over there. When people asked me why she'd left, I'd used the joke that the tables were worth wiping more than the tables here. We'd all laugh, it was funny. It was a bit of fun. And sure, wasn't it grand? She'd gone off and who'd have thought it? But it would just make me sadder that she was gone. I didn't really understand why she'd gone, except that she, you know, she wasn't happy here. And that she seemed like no reason at all. She was happy enough. And anyway, if she wasn't happy here, why'd she be any happier anywhere else? She'd still be the same Annie, just elsewhere.
She'd been here about 2 months or thereabouts. I saw her from where I was sitting and thought, well, that girl is just beautiful. She had, has, these beautiful big eyes which seemed to change colors in different lights. I thought she was so beautiful. She was charming, the cute accent, different pronunciations. When she brought me the check, I made a fool of myself, stammering, dropping change, trying to engage her in conversation and failing, talking out my ass about Ireland. She laughed, to her credit. A couple of days later, I was walking home from work and I realized she was walking along behind me. She drew level with me at a light, so I said, hey. She could have ignored me, but she didn't. She smiled and said, hey, right back at me. So I thought, screw it. Do you remember me? There was this long moment for a second. I thought, oh, shit. We blinked at one another. I felt like I was back in the bar watching her from across the room. And then she said,
oh, yeah, you came into the bar the other night. Sure, where else could I have met him?
I was delighted, but I'd bet it was a lucky guess. I didn't even care. I'm Bo.
Aineen.
We got to talking. I invited her for a cup of coffee, and we had one of these great meandering talks, all about what it's like in Ireland, and how she was finding it here, my life here, and I told her all about my family and my dad, and she listened. She really did, and it was really great. She hated the fact that she was from a place that was famous for drinkers and fighters and little green fields, somewhere so quaint. Painfully quaint, she'd say, rolling her eyes at me.
I guess we kind of started dating then. I don't know. I always wondered if he was happy with me. I mean, when I was talking or when we were walking along or when we were at a film or when we were doing anything, I always wondered if he actually enjoyed spending time with me. Then I started wondering if I even enjoyed spending time with him. It was like we were just spending time together for something, anything to do.
I'd always thought that we were on the same wavelength and understood one another and all of that. Because that's what twins did and all. Twins on the telly and all the twins I read about and that. I thought we were like that too, but we'd always been together. When we were kids and growing up and on and on, we went through everything together. I always told her everything and thought that she told me everything. But then one day after work, the two of us were talking and I was mopping the place and I remember looking at the mop going round and round, leaving little damp swirls that dried into the floor and feeling contented while Aineen's voice chirped in the background. And I can't even remember what she was saying or what I was replying, but I said something about how happy we'd always been here as kids and even now. And she was quiet for a long time. But when I turned around, she was sat slumped down on the floor against the bar, crying. Aineen didn't much go in for crying. I asked her why she was crying, and she said she couldn't remember being happy. She couldn't remember ever being happy. All she could remember was being sad, sad, sad. I said, come on, Aineen, don't be so melodramatic. She'd get like that at times, feeling all sad and that, and I always wanted to cheer her up, but at the same time, you can't cheer someone up who doesn't want cheering. She should have just said nothing, didn't look up. So I put the mop aside and knelt down beside her. She looked up at me, her eyes bright with tears. Everything was perfect then. She knew that she had been happy more often than she had been sad. But she said that all of the happy memories had been spun into one big, soft, doughy chunk of memory. And all she could remember were vague feelings of weak happiness. But nothing concrete. Nothing she could reach out and touch.
Nothing I could reach out and touch.
She tried to remember days like her communion, her birthdays, Christmases, parties, but they all folded in on each other and melted into one and collapsed. They blurred together and she couldn't remember.
If I had gotten my bike for Christmas?
Or was it for her 9th birthday? And who came to which party? And when was it Father set the tablecloth on fire with the candle? Or had that even happened? And was it actually Lucy's birthday when she lost her tooth?
Or was it Amy's or Saoirse or Finn's?
And on and on. And when she thought about these things and couldn't remember.
I panicked.
And wondered if people couldn't remember things and she would
be
scared
that
she would
forget what was true and what wasn't.
And she was scared that she
would
forget
what
people
looked like
and wouldn't
be
able
to recognize
them
when
she
saw them.
And what if they couldn't remember her either and they each walked about
hopelessly looking
for one another, looking
for
a person they couldn't
remember,
for a reason they couldn't recall, and she thought of this and she said she would
have
to
sit
down with the
tips
of her fingers
against
the temples
and
feel
the
blood thumping. Stop it! We sat there for a while. I wasn't sure what to say to her. It was strange. I'd never had nothing to say to her before. It was silly, what she was saying. No, not silly. It was strange, what she was saying. I'd never really thought about it. I'd never really thought to think about it. I said, I'm trying to get my head around all of this. And she said,
sure, aren't I trying to get my head around it too?
So I told her that the thing about having a twin was that I'd never forget her, and she'd never forget me, and even if she forgot all of the things she worried about forgetting, wouldn't I be there to remind her?
She liked to do different things, new things. She liked the novelty of being in a new place, meeting new people. We were together all the time, with her dragging me along by the hand, walking to the park, driving to the beach. She tried to show me how to skip stones. I was really happy. I thought she was too. I don't know, she seemed happy, but sometimes she just seemed to check out. We drank a lot. She drank a lot. I mean, I drank too. I was trying to rein it in. I was a bad drunk. I'd get into stupid fights, yell at people, overreact to little things. I used to bring my friends to the bar where she was working, and whenever she looked over, I'd wave energetically, and then when she turned away, I'd kick myself for looking like an idiot, as she'd say. She was always very busy, walking about, chatting to everyone. She loved talking to her customers. The customers loved her too. She just got on with people.
It wasn't so bad at first. It was pure easy to get a job and get settled and all. And everything was so much bigger and brighter and better than in Ireland. And all of the people seemed so cheery and wished that you'd have a nice day in the shops and all. And they'd all say something nice about my accent when I'd serve them their food. And they were all just so friendly and polite and nice that I didn't think about Ireland at all. And maybe I should've, what with letters arriving from Fionn every few weeks and all. And I read them letters, I read them over and over, but they got so repetitive, because that's what it's like there, the same shite over and over and over again. I didn't miss home, the gossip and the priests and the boring feckin' stories. I missed him.
Every day I could see her checking out mentally, getting a little more vacant, a little more disinterested. It sucked seeing her getting bored, like seeing her actively get bored. Her level of boredom creeping up minute by minute. I didn't like it, so I wanted to do something for her. We were all at my friend Sam's house one night having a few drinks, and Sam was one of these assholes that'd bring out his guitar and make everyone listen to him sing at every opportunity. So he was singing, we were all singing and drinking, and it was nice. It was a nice night. Someone starts insisting that Aineen should sing something Irish, and she's all like, no, really, and got all faux offended, saying, hey, so just because I'm Irish, I'm a singer, huh? And Sam said, oh yeah, get a few drinks into an Irish girl, and she'll be singing like a little bird, so Aineen clearly wants to do it, and why wouldn't she? You know, she was always singing to herself. I mean, her voice was great. So we all just egged her on until she did sing.
Shalasadam Tom Shem Kolas Nadooster May Shadayer Kuslende.
I mean, the song was beautiful. It really was. but it brought us all down a little. I mean, I guess we'd never really heard anything like it. When she stopped singing, she went a bit quiet and shy. I guess we all did. Kind of avoiding eye contact with each other, getting a little, I don't know, wistful or something. But then we snapped back to how we were before, only a little louder, a little drunker, trying to overcompensate, I guess, for that feeling. A little sweet, a little sad. She said it was usually sung by a man. I couldn't believe it. It sounded perfect coming out of her mouth. I thought I'd learn it for her, like as a surprise. It was hard as hell. I had no idea how to spell the title. Thompson Cola? You know how that's spelled? Yeah, well, not like it sounds. It took me forever to find the lyrics. But I found them, and I found a recording of it, and I learned it off, you know, like, phonetically. I tried really hard, you know? And I thought she'd love it. I thought it would fix everything, that she wouldn't be bored anymore. I thought it would make her think that I was worth dating.
The first time I called home, I wanted to talk to Fionn. I wanted just Fionn. But Mam answered the phone. I nearly hung up. And of course, by the end of the call, I wished I had hung up. She talked and talked, telling me I had abandoned her and I'd abandoned Fionn, and for nothing. For a nothing job in a place where nothing meant anything. She said more and more, and I could just feel Fionn in the background, and I wished I could talk to him. I didn't want him listening to her. What did she know? I let her say her piece. Sure, she'd have probably been rehearsing it since the day I left. And then I let her hang up on me. After that, I didn't call home anymore. I didn't answer calls from home, because I didn't want to talk to her. I didn't want to think about home. But all of the time, it was like it was creeping up on me.
We had a postcard from her one day. I was supposed to be in work early, so I got it and brought it into the kitchen and read it, and then I read it again. I put it into my pocket and brought it off to work, because I didn't want to share it with Mam just yet. And I was so cheered that I got there 10 minutes early, so I leaned against the wall and I read it another 2 times. I read it on my break too. I still have it. There wasn't much in it. All she said was she had a job. She was having a nice time, but there was enough. I missed her a lot. I knew she'd have sent more if she had had time, but it sounded like she was working an awful lot, working all the time.
I thought I could make her happy. I mean, I thought she'd love the song. I thought I'd sing it, and before I got past the first verse, she'd fall all over me in delight. I don't know. I thought she would love it. I wanted her to love it. Maybe not the singing, but the effort. I thought she'd appreciate it. That was the plan, anyway. She came over one day, and I told her I had a surprise for her. It was good. She was in a good mood, so I knew she'd be delighted. I sat her down on the couch, and I held her hands real romantic-like. She sat there grinning at me. She had no idea what was coming. I was worried that I wouldn't pronounce the words right and I'd get the tune wrong, but I thought, fuck it, and I just went for it.
It was awful. Worse than you could even imagine. It was like being dragged home, but dragged to some warped version of it. The words sounded all wrong in his accent. He pronounced them all wrong. I was smiling before he started it because I was wondering what the surprise was. But when he started, I could feel the smile stretching across my face, like the corners of my mouth were being pulled hard from both sides, and my cheeks started hurting. He didn't sound like Fionn. He didn't sound like anything. Well, he sounded like someone making fun of the song, making fun of Fionn for singing it, making fun of me for liking it. And the worst part was, he clearly thought I'd be so happy looking at me cheerily while singing it in a kind of aren't I great kind of way. I wanted to kill him, but how could I say anything? It was nice, it was such a nice gesture, but Jesus, it was so awful. So after the first few lines, I just threw my arms around him and said something like, I don't know, oh, how nice or whatever, I can't even, and then I made some excuse and left about half an hour later. I thought I was gonna be sick. There were times when I thought he was going to sing it again, and I'd start babbling on about nothing in particular just so he wouldn't.
It went exactly as I'd planned. I mean, we didn't fall into bed or anything, but she threw her arms around me and she loved it. I thought we were having a great time. I thought everything was back on track. I liked her. I liked spending time with her. I thought she liked spending time with me. We always had fun. But there was always the feeling in the back of my head that she was just putting up with me for something to do. I just... And then this one night she was over at my place and she was real quiet the whole time and I was trying to cheer her up, so I started whistling the stupid song, thinking it would help. And suddenly she just says, "You're not whistling it right." So I stopped. I was panicking a little. I wasn't whistling it right. And then she starts coming out with all this nonsense about twins, listing off people who had twins like Elvis and Liberace and, fuck, I don't know, Cleopatra or something. And for a while I listened to it, but I got fed up. For weeks she'd been standoffish and quiet and I was doing everything right. So I just said, "Listen, Amy, what the fuck are you talking about?" And she just looked at me, so I said, "What, do you not want me to sing the song?" After a second, she just said, "I'm unhappy, Bo, do you know that? I thought coming here, I thought just being here would make me happy." It was such a weird, bleak thing to say. I mean, what could I even say to that? So I said, "So, what can I do?" And I guess that wasn't the response she was looking for. She clammed up again, glared at me, so I just folded my arms, and then she folded her arms, and we just looked at each other. And honestly, she looked so much like a petulant little kid in that moment that I couldn't help myself. I started laughing. It was absolutely the wrong thing to do. She started yelling at me about, I don't even remember, nothing. Nothing.
I don't know why I picked a fight with him. I was bored, I guess. For weeks I had this feeling, not of boredom exactly, but of something similar. Some weird feeling of familiarity, and at first I couldn't put my finger on it. Screaming at him should have made me feel better, but somehow it was just like I was doing it for something to do.
I pointed out to her that she was acting like a total fucking lunatic, and she told me I was an asshole, and I told her she was an asshole, and she said she was sick of me. I said she was acting hysterical, and she said, "I am not hysterical." She was really losing it, so I told her to calm down, which was, in retrospect, the wrong thing to do because it got her even more head up. And instead of calming down, she knocked over the nearest thing to her, which just so happened to be a photograph of my old man. It wasn't that badly damaged, but to be honest, it was the wrong thing to knock down. And without thinking, I yelled at her that she was a stupid, careless bitch. She was obviously upset that she'd broken it, but she wasn't apologizing. I picked it up and straightened up, and I said, "Well, aren't you going to apologize?" She said nothing. Again, just looked me dead in the eye and then folded her arms. I got kind of worked up then, saying my family were very important to me, and my dad was sick, and he was important to me, and shit, I don't even remember that the photo was important, that everything was important, important, important. I guess I was talking to her a little like she was a kid. She stood in front of me, sulking like a kid, and I got angrier and angrier, and I guess I got carried away. I guess I went straight through anger and got to that stage where I just wanted to provoke her into saying something, anything, just to get a response. Yeah, I was looking for a reaction. But that doesn't excuse what she said to me.
After a while, it made me angry. Not even at him, he wasn't worth getting angry at, but at myself, because it was the same feeling I used to get back home, and I couldn't understand why I didn't feel different. I'd have thought moving away would turn my life into something better, but it wasn't better. It was still boring and slow and the same. He was shouting and I was just barely listening, flapping his arms around like a great big hen, his face all contorted with anger, just giving out and giving out. And he reminded me so much of Mam in just then that I couldn't help but hate everything about him. So I thought I'd say something to shut him up.
So I was yelling at her, brandishing the photo, giving it a huge significance that I guess it didn't really have. She listened to my whole diatribe and I kept thinking she was going to say something, but she would stop herself. Eventually, I ran out of steam and there was this long pause, or maybe there wasn't. I guess I've gone over it so many times in my head that it seems like there was a long pause. I guess she'd just been trying to think of something to say, something that knocked me back. Boy, did she deliver. She looked me straight in the eye and said,
"Who cares about that picture, Bo? Your dad will be dead soon anyway."
And then there really was a pause. I was so mad, I couldn't think straight. I thought I was gonna punch her in the face. I wish I had, because that would have been the end of it. I'd have punched her in the face, and we'd never have seen each other again.
I almost wish I could take it back, but as soon as I said it, I was glad I did. He looked like he was gonna punch me. I almost hoped he would. He snapped something back at me, but I barely listened to it. I left, and as I went out the door, I heard him yelling, "Aineen!" But I didn't go back. Then I was alone again. It made it all right, for a while. I thought a lot about home, about Mam and Da and the bar and the sea and the air, the fields, the farms. Everything was so beautiful with retrospect. I thought about Fionn most of all. I hadn't spoken to him in months. But the more I thought about home, the worse I began to feel. At first, it was all beautiful, but the more I began to think about the bad stuff, the fights and the yelling, Da dying and Mam falling apart, the loneliness and the overbearing quiet, and the unshakable feeling that every day I didn't try to get away was a day wasted, the darkness creeping in on me. I wanted to leave, but I didn't want to go back home.
She regretted saying it. I know she did. She must have. The anger left me pretty quick. It went right out of me. That's how it happens. It comes, it goes. My dad was the same. We snap and we come back together. I put the picture back and it was fine. The glass was smashed, but the photo was fine. I went out after her, but I couldn't find her. I'd already forgiven her in my head for what she said, but somehow I was the one who called her apologizing, trying to make up. Somehow I was the bad guy. I was always in the wrong. How come I was always in the wrong? How come I was always in the goddamn... It doesn't matter anyway. The song. I never should have tried to sing the goddamn song. It was one of these things. It wasn't a big deal, but I obsessed and obsessed about it until suddenly it seemed so obvious that that was why she was angry. That was why she left. Everything was ruined by that stupid song.
I remember hearing that lovely tune the last night I spent in the States and how happy I was to hear it and how I thought it was Fionn. I remember waking up in the morning and hearing Fionn humming that tune. I remember walking along the beach and Fionn singing. I remember Fionn singing at mass and singing in the pub and singing at home and everyone saying what a beautiful noise he made. I remember. I tried not to think about back home, but I'd often wake up and remember and then I couldn't get back to sleep, no matter how hard I tried. I remembered and remembered and remembered. I went to work a zombie and came home exhausted, but I couldn't sleep with all the remembering. It was like something had followed me over, and the more I tried to get away, the more it dragged me back. I couldn't stop thinking about my life back home, and I was scared. I remember I woke up one night and it was awful quiet. It was so quiet. And I remember thinking how strange it was, because for as long as I could remember, Mam had always been down in the kitchen, flapping about and cleaning and scrubbing and making noise, cleaning counters and windowsills, pulling everything out of the fridge so she could scrub away at it, the scritch, scritch, scritch of the steel wool sounding softly up on the stairs and in our rooms. That night I woke up and there was nothing but quiet. That was all I could hear, only that horrible, unbearable silence. So as I got up and I padded over to peer out the door, then slipped out and stood in the hallway. I couldn't hear down there at all. It made me nervous, standing there in the dark, the quiet all round me and not really there at all. I went downstairs in the strange nighttime shadows, the glow of the streetlights coming in the windows, my hand sliding smoothly down the banister, and when I got to the bottom of the stairs, I just stopped, and I thought I could just go back to bed. Right then, that's what I thought. And I think if I had, I'd still be there in that house now. I'd be turning into her, elbow deep in suds, knees red from kneeling and scrubbing, and kneeling and praying, all the time in the kitchen and the church, eyes red from the sting of the bleach, her shoulders hunched with her weight of whatever it was she had hanging over her, pressing down on her day in, day out. I pushed on the door of the kitchen, and I was standing there with my heart drumming in my chest so loudly, in the quiet of the house that I thought, as she'll hear me, I know she will. And the door opened soundlessly like every other door in the house. The gleaming hinges oiled into screamless, submissive silence. And every drawer, every cupboard, every press in the kitchen was open. Even the fridge was thrown open and cast in a raw glow. And everything was on the floor. All of the pots and pans and plates and the cutlery, the glasses, the tea towels, and cups and everything, all of it, laid out on the gleaming floor, fanning out from my mother's prone figure like a bird's wing. The smell of bleach was so strong that my eyes started to water, and the stinging tears dripped down my cheeks and silently onto that cold, clean floor. Her head was hanging and her hands between her legs and the ground and the palms up, dripping. I stood there shivering, my breath caught up in my throat, my eyes blurring with the bleachy tears, and I couldn't help but let out a little gasping sigh. And she looked up at me. And through my tears, I could see that her eyes were streaming too. "Go back to bed," she said. But I said, "I won't go back until you go to bed too." Because how could I have left her sitting there on the cold kitchen floor with the bleach sting in her eyes, surrounded by all our beautiful clean things? And she shook her head and she looked away from me again, starting to retreat back into her own little world of shade. So I went over to her, tiptoeing in between all the neat rows of boxes and pans and everything. And I told her to get up right now, ma'am, taking her face between my two hands as it dipped and drooped in front of me. And I thought about that Egypt feck brother of mine upstairs sleeping away without a care in the world. And I said, "Get up now, ma'am," because she was scaring me. And then with her dead, dripping eyes and her downturned mouth, and I said, "It's all right. It's all right. I'm here. I'll be here always. I will. I will." And she said nothing. She just sat there. And her head started to drop again, so I pulled it up and I said, "Ma'am, look at me right now." And she looked up at me and then she reached up and she put her hands over my two hands on the side of her head, and everything was fine for a moment until I realized there was blood running down my wrists. I yanked my hands away, but I wasn't hurt. My hands were slick with blood, but it wasn't mine, it was hers. And she just looked at me blankly as I reached out and took one of her hands and carefully turned it over so the palm faced me. And it was covered with dozens of little cuts and scrapes from the fingers and palm all the way up to her wrist to nearly her elbow. And she looked down and she mumbled, "I can't get it all clean." And there on the floor were wads of steel wool that Mam had been scrubbing her hands with. After all, she'd only after cleaned everything else in the house. I dropped her hand and I stood up away from her, wanting to go and wash her blood off my hands and leave her in the clean kitchen with her filthy hands messing it all up just so she could clean it again. And as I walked away, stepping carefully over the bird's wing of boxes and plates and knives, she said, "Aineen, Aineen." But I didn't stop. I went back to my room and I sat there shaking. And I knew then that I had to leave that house and those people. I had to leave them and do something else. Anything else, only I couldn't stay there in the clean and the unbearable quiet. I could never. And I carried that around with me and it was always there hanging over me and pressing down on me until I decided to go far, far away so as I'd never have to see either of them again.
I thought about her all the time. At least she'd gone someplace new. Someplace where not everything was a reminder of what was gone. With her gone, Mam slowly glassed herself away in a cold world of cleaning. And I worked and I laughed and I got on and met with friends and did all the things I'd done before, and I thought about Aineen a lot. We all went down the beach one day and we were drinking a few cans and having a bit of a laugh, and Mike Glynn came over to me and he said, "I was looking a bit mopey." "Ah, you know," I said. And he said, "Here, look at what Shane can do. Shane, here, show Fionn what you can do there, will you?" Shane picked up a stone and he said, "Look at this, Fionn." And he skipped it right out to sea. I swear to God, it must have skipped about 20 times. I felt very alone.
I built it up in my head, and the more I built it up, the more of a big deal it became. It was bad, but I built it up until it got even worse. She was bad, but I was worse. And worse again, that stupid song was stuck in my head. I kept humming it absent-mindedly all the time. My friends kept commenting on it. It was driving me nuts. So I tried calling her and she didn't answer. I called and called. Just after she left, I called. I was worried she wouldn't be able to find a taxi or find her way home. I just couldn't believe she'd left. She didn't answer anyway. I was scared. I mean, if she'd been hurt or... Anyway, I called her again the next day and she was really fucking cold. I kept apologizing and apologizing. Why did I keep apologizing? She just wouldn't say anything. all monosyllabic answers and, yeah, okay. Real passive-aggressive. Real Irish.
The day before I left, it was lovely. I woke up in the morning and went downstairs and poured myself a cup of tea. No sound in the house. I checked all of the bags. I had them all packed a day early. Checked my ticket, checked and checked and checked to make sure I had everything and hadn't forgotten nothing. I went into Mam's room and she was sitting still and quiet in her bed. She looked up at me and I looked down at her. She didn't say anything. Neither did I. I went into Fionn then and asked him to come out for a walk with me. And we were walking along and he was being real quiet too. And I was thinking, I was talking on and on about something. And he was just saying, yeah, Aineen, no, Aineen, all right, Aineen. And after a while, we both sat down and neither of us said a thing. It was weird because he usually talked and talked. I wanted to say goodbye to some of my friends, so I was looking down at my watch and trying to think of something to say, anything, you know, and Fionn took my hand. And there were so many things I should have said or I wished I had said. I couldn't think of anything then, so I just mumbled something about looking after Mam and all, and Fionn nodded along. And then we sat another while, and I said, well, I better get back and make sure I've everything packed and all, and Fionn said, Aineen, wait. And then he said the loveliest things. He said that he loved me and he'd miss me and all. And it made me right sad. And I still couldn't say them back. And he put his forehead against mine and I put my forehead against his. And he was crying and I was crying. And the two of us stood there crying and upset. And some punter came past us on a bike and said, yous look like a pair of right gays. And Fionn went after him, but he sped right up and all. And I couldn't help but laugh at the sight of Fionn running after that eejit with his arms wheeling around him and yelling after him. And when he came back, the pair of us laughed and laughed. The next day, the last day, we went for another walk and Fionn ruined everything.
We went down along the beach. She was in one of her moods, skipping stones out along the water and running away from me down along the beach. I thought it was that she was nervous about going away and that she wanted to see everything before she did and all. That she was scared of forgetting. We walked along the stone wall and the two of us up on top of it, just like when we were kids, her in front of me and me just behind her. And we jumped down onto the little sandy shore with all the reeds and little shells and all on it. I sat down, but Aineen stood there looking out to sea. Do you want to talk about it? I asked.
Nah.
Are you scared?
Nah. Well, I am, but not. Well.
Well, what? She didn't answer right away. She stared out to sea. And after a moment, she bent down and started untying her shoelaces. She kicked off her shoes and her socks and tucked a strand of hair behind her ear, straightening up again. I blinked at her, asked her what she was doing. She was quiet for a second, but then she answered.
Well, sometimes if you stand right here looking out to sea with your feet in the sand and no sound at all around you except the train in the background and the wind and the sea, well, sometimes you can almost pretend that you were somewhere else.
I still couldn't really see what she was scared of. So I asked her again. She just turned her back to me.
I'm scared if I leave here, I'll eventually come back.
And that scares you?
Nothing scares me more.
I'd always thought Aineen was coming back someday. I'd never thought that she didn't want to. It had never even occurred to me. But you know, I won't. Well, I don't think I'll ever go to America. She just said nothing. Her toes curling in the sand. She just kept looking straight ahead at the sea. I said it again, but it was like she wasn't hearing me at all. And she put her shoes back on and started walking back home. And I followed her, asking her and asking her, and she was real quiet. But eventually she snapped at me. Shut up, Fionn! I told her not to tell me to shut up, and by the time we got home, the two of us were worked up and I knew there was going to be a fight. She just ran upstairs to check in her bags again and then rang for a taxi to bring her to the airport and came back down. And first I tried to jolly her along. Ah, Jesus, Aineen. I said, think of Liberace and Romulus and Remus, who founded Rome. They did, and all of the twins who did something special. And they hardly did it apart. I said to her, you will come back. Ireland is special. We're special.
I will not come back. This dump special. Me and him special. We're nothing special. We aren't going to walk Ireland showing off like really something to behold. You can just let go of your Egypt dreams, Fionn, because you know dreams won't come true, but you still think they might come true for you or for us. And that's pathetic. Dreams. Talking about dreams like a great big baby. Dreams don't come true. I said that to him. I screamed it at him while he sat at the table with his mouth open, his face angry and confused. I wanted to take back the words. I wanted to go back to the way we were the day before, the two of us laughing and hugging on the beach, but we couldn't. I just kept screaming at him because he needed to grow up. He couldn't just sail through life as passively as he was, dreaming about what? Being a famous twin for doing nothing. And waking up when he was 40 and realizing all of his dreams were nothing. He'd realise that he hadn't achieved what he thought he would. Who in Ireland, in this backwards feckin' country, ever will? I couldn't anymore. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. And I'm sick of being unhappy all of the time. If I spend one more day here, I'm going to fold in upon myself and die, Fionn. I know I am, and you know it too.
And so she fecked off upstairs to get her bag. Not a care for anyone or anything she was leaving behind.
I came downstairs with all of my bags and everything. Made a lot of noise about it and all, but he didn't come out to say bye, give me a hug. Nothing. I started to get angrier and angrier.
I sat in the kitchen. I was furious. Mam told me when we were born that she'd always pulled the blanket right off of me and the pair of us in the crib together. She was selfish then and she's selfish now. When she came through the kitchen, I made like she wasn't even there. Sitting, staring straight at the wall.
I went in and tried to get him to say a proper goodbye to me and all. And he was just sat there like a stone, looking at nothing. Not even going to hug your own sister and me off to America. Your own twin. I think you want to sit there feeling sorry for yourself. No business of mine. He and half of feckin' Ireland want to sit around feeling sorry for themselves. Too scared to do something with their lives. The passive feck.
I told her she could just feck right off to America. Don't worry about any of us here. No, just leave. Just feck off to America and good riddance.
I didn't even think. I just ran over where he was and hit him as hard as I could. Fists flailing. He didn't react. He didn't do anything. Passive. So I did it again and again. I was upset. I could have been crying. I hit him. Not hard, but I suppose he was just fed up of me at that point because he suddenly grabbed my wrists and pulled me right up close to him and said,
Lady!
It's the only time I remember him snapping at me like that. I froze. The two of us were there, his hand around my wrist. I about to snap something at him, something cruel, no doubt, but something in his eyes made me freeze. His eyes were so dark then, and my words caught up in my throat as he stared at me and I stared at him. Everything seemed very quiet. After a second, he shook his head and let me go, and I picked up my suitcase and ran out the door. I was shaking all the way to the airport, but I ignored it and I tried not to think about it because I didn't want to think about those horrible, endless black pools his eyes became then, and his strong grip and how trapped I felt.
It's this. If she just could have said how she was feeling, just told me something, anything, it wouldn't have bothered me so much. But she just kept saying everything was fine, or grand. And she said it so much, I thought everything must be fine and grand. I still felt bad, don't get me wrong, but I thought she decided to let it go and we could start hanging out again. So I texted her and called her a bunch of times over the next few weeks, and she ignored everyone, every single one. I started to get angry. I can't help it sometimes. I thought if I could talk to her again, get some closure, not even closure, if she could apologize, if I could apologize, I only wanted to be good enough. I didn't want to be the best, the smartest, the most attractive. I just wanted to be good enough. Jesus Christ, is that too much to fucking ask for?
That night, I can remember every detail about that night. I was working anyway. It was busy, busy enough. A lot of customers coming in and out, and I chatting away to them, not really thinking and that. Anyway, I turned around and there was Beau, standing in front of me, looking murderous. I guess I hadn't spoken to him in quite a while, and I had been meaning to call him or text him or something, but I didn't remember to. So I told him I was sorry, and I tried to duck round him, and he said, "Ah, hold on a minute." And I said, "Sorry, sorry, and I'm busy," and ran off, which I guess was a bit cowardly and all, but still. Anyway, it went on like that for an hour or two. He trying to catch a hold of me and me ducking left and right around him like some kind of game. And all of the time, he was getting more and more worked up and angry and stressed and drunker and drunker. And I knew if I stopped to talk to him, he'd give me the most almighty flaking, so I just didn't stop. I gestured at tables and picked up drinks and ran in circles around him and round him and round him, all of the time catching his eye and lifting my hands in a gesture of helpless compassion that I could tell wasn't getting him any more, that I could tell was getting him more and more riled up. And I guess he got fed up because at one point I was passing the bar. He grabbed a hold of my arm and shouted at me that we needed to talk. And though it was loud enough in there that it could have passed unnoticed, one of the bartenders, Mikey, heard him and didn't like it at all and pitched him right out onto the street. I felt bad, but what could I do?
It drove me crazy. Just this evasion of fucking everything. She kept running away, like literally running away, and I was just getting more and more wound up and angry. I was a perfect gentleman to her. And she was ignoring all my calls and my texts. And look, I'm not an asshole, but I've been putting a lot of effort in. We'd been dating for 2 fucking months and she just cut me off. And it wasn't fair. I mean, she was awful to me. And here I was, being the bigger person, trying to mend walls and build bridges and fix things between us. It wasn't the end just because she said so. What right did she have to dictate that? What right? It wasn't fair. It wasn't fucking fair. I wanted to just find her and see what was up. Yeah, there was a scene. I was kicked out. I went into the bar a few streets over and just sat there. Just sat there, stewing. The waitress kept coming over and pointedly putting down bar mats with pictures of little birds on them, but I ripped them all up.
That day. I will never forget that day. Things that seemed so small at the time now seem blown up 100, 1,000 times, and I can't forget. I guess if you know what to look for, it's different. Everything becomes a sign. Everything starts to mean some other thing. And I can go over and over it in my head and say, if only I had thought, if only I had known. But really, what difference does it make in the end?
I was thinking about Fionn. Then, just after Beau left, how happy he was to work with. And I missed him a lot then, but I shook it off and kept on going. Like, I was working late, but the place cleared out right early enough. And so after doing a bit of cleaning, I was allowed to go home. And Mikey says to me, "Aw, Amy, wait for me and I'll drive you home. It's not safe for you to be walking home." But I tell him, "Nah, you're grand," because I didn't want to be waiting around and all. Sure, I'm only down the road and I'm not even in your direction. So I tell him I'll see you tomorrow and then I'm off. I wasn't really thinking about anything. I was there walking along and it cold enough, but it was all right. I started thinking about Mam and Fionn and back home and what they were doing and if they were missing me and if they wished I was there or if they were better off and happier and that. And I didn't know and I didn't think about it at all anymore. It was very quiet.
I was getting into a real mean mood. That's what my mom used to say about my dad. Real mean. You know, the haze coming down. I left really late. I thought I'll have another drink. I was too angry. A drink might mellow me out a little. I had one, two, I don't know, a few. I eventually went back to her bar anyway, around when she'd get off, and I was leaning against the wall a little bit away from it, humming the song. Fucking song.
What difference? I could have called her, and she went... She probably wouldn't have answered because she was always working or busy or just not answering her phone. What could I have done? Nothing. And yet, when I look back, all I think about are the things I could have done. and from this distance they seem infinite.
And I'm there walking along, and the only thing I can hear is my shoes and my breathing and all. I looked up, and the night was right clear, which was strange, because usually when it's clear, it's not so dark, but it was right dark that night. I'm a minute down the road when I hear it. Fionn? It's Fionn, it feckin' is! I'd recognize that tune anywhere. So I turn, running back towards the sound, when suddenly someone's arms close round me. And I turn around, and isn't it only that feck Beau? Asking me, am I still so busy and in such a hurry and on, his voice barely registers because I'm trying to figure out where the humming is coming from. So I just laugh and strain my ears to hear it again, but nothing to be heard. So as I turn back to ask Beau, did he hear anything? And as I turn back, I realise he's humming. Of course it's him humming. And isn't it him making the noise? And now I think of it, it sounded wrong. It sounded a bit off. It sounded like Beau. It did. And how could I have been so stupid? For a second, I'm too angry to say anything, and then I just fold my arms and walk away, away from the big grinning face of him, and he yells, what? In a stupid accent. I ignore him because I don't want him to know he's upset me, thinking Fionn was out on the street. Out on the street at 3 a.m. What an idiot. What an idiot I was, and I feel my cheeks heating up and my eyes stinging with tears. I bite my lip hard to stop myself from crying and walk on, Beau's laughter echoing all round me.
It was perfect. For a second, it was perfect. I thought she was smiling at me, but then her face fell when she realized who it was. I tried to talk to her, but she kept looking around and asking if I heard anything. I leaned back against the wall, and I guess I started humming after a while, because suddenly her face darkened and she stalked off.
I'm 5 minutes down the road when I hear it. Again. So I just ignore it and keep on, assuming it's Beau following me, trying to annoy me. I didn't even think to be scared. I was so mad.
It started with a feeling. Just a feeling. When I woke up that morning, a day like any other. Like any other, except so different. Everything was different. Everything was wrong. And everything wasn't. And suddenly, everything righted itself. I got out of bed, and I remember thinking how something was different. It was. It wasn't just the feeling I got when I woke up. It was something else. I poured myself a cup of tea in the kitchen, and the spoon hitting the sides of the cup as I stirred it sounded loud, very loud in the silence, the quiet. I didn't work it out until I was walking along to work. I realised what was wrong. I realised it just all of a sudden, and I stopped. It was quiet.
That night. I don't know why she reacted so badly. It was that stupid Irish song stuck in my head. And off she goes with her nose in the air. I started making my way home anyway, and I saw her walking along in front of me, probably still seething. I thought, well, I thought I'd give her a bit of a scare, you know? I didn't want to hurt her or anything. I just wanted to scare her. And I know how that sounds. At the time, I don't know, I was a little drunk. I was hurt. Just a real scare. Yeah. I was angry. I feel badly about it now, but at the time I thought it was a great idea. I thought I was so clever. I didn't want to hurt her, see? I just wanted to give her a scare.
And all the time I think I can hear it. That soft humming behind me making me think that if I turned around, Fionn will be there. He'll be there smiling and waiting for me to come back to him. Come back to where the two of us can be with our arms around each other forever and ever and forever. And I ignore it and keep on.
There wasn't a bird in the sky. Or in the trees, for that matter. Silence. I'd never noticed it before, and it was gone. It was strange. I remember thinking, hey, I should tell Annie. She'd be so upset that all of the birds flew away. I wondered where they all were. I kept going along to the pub, and all the way I didn't hear one bird. Not one peep. I whistled, and I whistled more. And And then I said to myself, Aineen, Aineen, but quiet, under my breath like.
I keep on and eventually the noise stops and I think finally he's gone away home. He's gone away and I keep on.
I was walking along behind her, really quietly. It was so dark anyway, she couldn't see who I was. I didn't know what I was gonna do. I just wanted to do something, anything. After a while, she stopped under a streetlight and looked back. She couldn't see who I was, I'm sure of it. I saw her face, though. She was scared. She was real scared. I could have just left it there. I suppose I should have just left it there. She stopped, then she whipped around and sped up, so, well, I did too. I didn't want to say anything in case she realized it was me. I just wanted to give her a scare and then run off. I was walking along thinking about how she'd been ignoring me and how cold she was, and the thing was, I really liked her. I really, really did. I should have just turned around and walked away.
It's real dead quiet. The kind of quiet where all you can hear is your own heart beating. The kind of quiet just before a fight. The kind of quiet when you arrive home to a gray-faced family. The kind of quiet just before fast footsteps behind you.
I didn't want to lose her, so I started to run a little. I felt my foot slip on something slick, but steadied myself. I guess she thought I was some drunk guy, I don't know. Maybe she knew it was me. When she realized I was running, she started running flat out.
And I break into a run, and I get to the bridge. And I remember seeing the moonlight bouncing off of the water. Bouncing off the endless black pool and thinking, how nice. And suddenly, I think I can hear the song all around me, all around me. But how could that be possible? How could it?
She was running, and I was running. I drew almost level with her and reached out to grab her arm. I wasn't trying, but she was too fast. But then she stumbled over something in the path and straightened and tried to run on. It was an accident. My foot came down on the back of her shoe.
And then something hit me hard. And as I fall to the ground, I try to look round a second too late, and my head hit something. It hit something hard, and as I fall, I feel someone grabbing at me, almost as if to catch me. And after that, everything is stars, stars. And I can hear Fionn calling me.
Aineen! I said it so loudly, I surprised myself. It was a strange, quiet walk after that. The only sound I could hear was the fluttering of my heart to my chest. And I felt better once I got into the pub. The familiar creaks and noises of it. After a while through, the feeling started creeping back in my hands and started shaking, something fierce, and I had to go out the back and sit down against the wall, and I couldn't for the life of me understand the way I was feeling. I walked back and forth and wondered if it had something to do with not hearing the birds, or if I had just gotten up on the wrong side of the bed that morning, or what, or what, or what? I walked over towards the trees at the back of the pub, breathing in and out. And just as I was feeling a little better, I heard a sad little crunch. The worst sound in the world. And I looked down and I realized I had trodden something. I lifted my foot and I realized it was a tiny little baby robin. I had stood on a poor tiny little baby robin. Because I hadn't been looking where I was going, and now it was dead because I had stood on it with my great big clumsy foot. I nearly cried. Then I collected myself and I probably didn't kill it. Oh, maybe it was on the ground anyway. It must have fallen from the tree. Maybe it was the fall to the ground and that was maybe what killed it. That's probably what happened. So it was okay. And I picked her up and I cradled her in my hands and she was so small, tiny. Perfect.
She and I had gone on a date in the park. We'd walked around, eating ice cream, grinning at each other. We'd stopped on the bridge and leant on it, looking out at the ducks in the water. It was real nice. She was so pretty, and I was so happy. God, I was. I guess I pushed her too hard. I wasn't trying to push her. I was trying to... I don't know. I didn't push her. My foot... I just wasn't thinking. I never meant, my heart was pounding so hard. She fell. She fell and her head cracked against the side of the bridge and it seemed so loud right then. It was dark. So dark. There was no one around. I looked at her. She looked so beautiful lying there. I thought I should pick her up, see if she's okay. But I didn't want to see how bad it was. I hesitated for a moment. Then I ran away. I ran out of there. I ran all the way home, into my room. I threw myself down on my bed, and I lay there breathless, my heart pounding. And I thought she probably got up, walked on home. She was probably just pretending. And I felt a bit better then.
I had to go get her. I had to go by myself. The phone rang in the middle of the night. It took that long for them to call us. Too long. They couldn't find the number. They had tried. The words didn't make any sense. I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand them. Mom snatched the phone away from me, saying that, what is it? What is it, Fionn? Will you stop making that silly noise? What is it? But I couldn't even answer. I slid down the wall while she talked into the phone, confused at first, and then angrier and angrier. I can't remember properly. I can't remember properly anymore. Everything before that night, everything before Aineen left, is in such clear focus. But after that, everything becomes disjointed and blurry and impossible to reach. After she hung up, Mam stared down at me. And I stared up at her. She picked the phone up again and started dialing number after number, making arrangements, booking flights, talking and talking like a wind-up doll, her eyes rolling. I asked her when she was leaving and all. She said, not me. You.
I read about it in the news. Saw it on TV. But there wasn't enough. They asked for witnesses to come forward with any information, mentioned that she was in critical condition. There was no follow-up, nothing to say that she'd recovered, that she was fine, that she was better, or nothing. She must have been fine. She must have got better. I tried to find out. I walked down there after a day or two. I thought I might ask. I think I would have asked.
When I got there, it was dark. It was so dark. I couldn't even remember if it was late at night or early in the morning. I slept. Then I got up. I put on my good suit. I don't know why I had it. Mom must have packed it for me while I was sitting in the hall. I looked at it. I looked at myself in the mirror. And I went to see her. The hospital was a concrete box, all sharp edges. It was horrible. I was looking up at all of the windows, wondering where she was. And when I bumped into a guy, nearly knocked him over, I did. I said, sorry. But he just looked at me, speechless, with his eyes empty, and he touched my arm softly and then suddenly ran on. Must have suffered some great loss, I thought. Through my numbness, I felt a flicker of something resembling sorrow for him. And I went inside the box.
I was walking along in a daze when I smashed right into this guy. A guy in a black suit like he'd wear to a funeral. And I was about to tell him to watch it when I heard him say, sorry, sorry, in a voice so close to hers. And I realized it had to be her twin. It must have been. My heart stopped, it really did. What were the chances? And maybe they weren't so slim, but right then it seemed almost impossible that he would be here and I would be here then, now. He was like her, but he was so different. I couldn't speak. His eyes met mine, then moved away again. They were like shards of glass. I reached out to touch him as if to check if he was real. My hand fluttered on his arm. And then I went on. She was fine. I know she was. She must have been fine. People don't just fall and die. They don't. I looked back over my shoulder. He was looking up at the building. She was fine. She must have been. How could she not have been? I didn't need to check. There was no sense in checking. And as I went on, I realized that perhaps I had imagined he was like her, that he had her voice, all of it. Maybe I just imagined I saw her in him. He probably wasn't who I thought he was at all. And she was fine. I hope she's happier wherever she is now.
She was still. so still. Her hands were cold. Why isn't her room warmer? I asked the doctor. He shook his head. It should have been warmer. My hands were shaking so hard I could barely sign the piece of paper he held out to me. She opened her eyes, but they closed again. And her head lolled sickly to the side. So I took it between my hands to steady it. We have to go back. You have to come back, I said. Her mouth opened and closed, like she was trying to say something, but the noise that came out was just a useless garble of nothing. I said it to the doctor. I said, we have to go back, to go back. He nodded. He said, Eileen, you have to go home now. Her head dropped and came up again. He said, Eileen. I said, Eileen. He said, what? I said, it's Eileen. 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 Elvis. Yeah. And Romulus. And Remus. Pharis and Zira. Castor and Pollux. Philip K. Dick. Cleopatra. Her kids, their names. We sit together. I try to remember. Her kids, Cleopatra, just, I can't. And who else? And who else? I know there's more, I do, I can't remember anymore. I'm sorry, I can't. Sorry.
Tra'anon in de dakigen kashlasadam Toim shaim kolas na duster me.
Thank you for joining us for Self Same by Kira Nickwerk. We'd like to thank the cast, the audience, and especially The Tank, an incubator for emerging artists in New York City, for their generous donation of space. You can learn more about The Tank at thetanknyc.org. And if you'd like to support Elephant Run District, our podcast, and the rest of our exciting programming, please donate at elephantrundistrict.org. You can find the link on this page. It's through generous donations like yours that we can keep bringing you the most exciting, independent, and newly developed plays. Thanks for listening. Until next time.